February 26, 2017, in Mauritius, open question and answers on parenting.
Questions? So I wanted to... Is that all right with everybody? Okay. This is a very interesting question. By the way, I'm not going to spend much time on questions that aren't particularly about parenting, because that's the focus. So any general questions about Krishna consciousness, I'm going to deal with very quickly. I am preaching to someone to practice Krishna consciousness, but his family is completely against Krishna conscious movement. The person is practicing secretly. They warn me not to preach. I am taking a great risk. Please comment. Well, I hope that you have a risk-taking nature. I know that one of our leaders has a disciple who is a Muslim imam living in like Iraq or Iran. And if his wife finds out that he's a devotee, by Islamic law, she will be allowed to divorce him and get full custody of the children. So he has to keep his Krishna consciousness completely secret, even from his wife. Pretty heavy situation. So I think in such a situation, you help them to keep their Krishna consciousness secret, and you really pray to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that when we pray to Lord Chaitanya, he makes even difficult things easy, and if we forget about him, he makes easy things difficult. This was a very nice question. They're all nice questions, but this one I particularly appreciated because it was so much in line with what we're talking about. How are the natures of children determined? So the natures of children are determined from their own desires in previous lifetimes. Their own desires and activities as accumulated over previous lifetimes. This is material, we're talking about material nature. We're not talking about spiritual nature. Our original spiritual nature is eternal, and it is the particular desire of the soul to serve Krishna in a particular way. Our spiritual nature is not related to the particular material nature we have in this lifetime. Just like the real nature of an actor has nothing to do with the character they play on the stage. How can future parents prepare themselves to have children of auspicious natures that can be very conducive to Krishna consciousness from the beginning of life? Well, I want to emphasize again that when we're speaking about nature here, we're not talking about auspicious or inauspicious. We're talking neutral. The natures we're talking about are not good or bad. What makes something good or bad is how we use it. Being a cautious person, being a people person, being a, you know, a detailed person, none of these are auspicious or inauspicious. They're neutral. If the question is how to have a child who's inclined to use their nature in the mode of goodness or transcendence, that has a lot to do with the consciousness at conception, during pregnancy, and birth, according to Ayurveda. So if the consciousness of the parents at conception, the consciousness of the mother during pregnancy, the atmosphere during the labor and the birth are very much in sattva-gun or bhakti, that will attract a child and develop a child who's likely to use their nature in sattva-gun or bhakti. But of course we have the example of Prahlad Maharaj, who had a demoniac father and a demoniac mother. But by simply hearing Narada Muni when he was in the womb, he became pure devotee. So at any time, yes? What? Ah, okay. Very nice. So but you're going to have to be willing to say you asked this question. So this is definitely a Mahasweet question. If you're willing to identify yourself, if you're not, that's fine. Who asked this question about nature? This Prabhu here, so you can give him a sweet. That was a Mahasweet question. So I want to make it very, very, very clear. Natures are neutral. They are not auspicious or inauspicious. But what we're interested in doing is attracting a soul who's inclined to bhakti for a sattva, and who will use their nature in that way. Now, even if you had your child before you became a devotee, they're already 12 years old, still we can always affect the mode of nature by especially sound. So what sounds are in the house, what food is in the house, I would really advise don't buy non-devotee food, especially grains. So eat home-cooked prasad and have transcendental sounds in the house. And this is the main way of elevating a person's consciousness. And especially our meditation. The main way that we are going to elevate our consciousness in this age is the meditation on the Hare Krishna mantra and transcendental sound. This is a very, very wonderful. Okay, most devotees nowadays take it for granted that when they are devotees, their children will automatically be devotees. We talked about this yesterday. This is the mood that if I just set the right example, my children will be devotees. That is a holdover from, you know, about two, three generations ago, when all you needed was example. And we talked about how example is not enough. The reason being the children have so many examples that they can look at. Okay, and as a result, they focus more on educating their children materially, thinking the spiritual side will come by itself. Well, good luck with that. Now we have devotees having grown up, children, how can we help these children now? Children born to devotee families but who have not received a Krishna conscious education, more or less we have to treat as people who have not been brought up as devotees. With the exception that they think they're already devotees, so it's much harder. So if you're a devotee and you bring up your child to think I'm a devotee, but you haven't actually trained them in Krishna consciousness, it's much more difficult. Because they think I'm a devotee, but they don't know anything, they don't have any experience. It's a problem. But basically, you have to deal with them as if they are brand new to Krishna consciousness, but proud. So how do you deal with that? Then you tell them, yes, 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 you are already a devotee, and therefore work with that basis. Just like in this country, most people are Hindus. So you don't just go to them and say, you're a fool, you don't know anything. I hope you don't do that. But you say to them, you are already a Hindu, this is already your culture, now try to understand it more deeply. So it's the same thing. You say, you're already a devotee, this is your culture, let's see if you can go more deeply into your own culture. In a family, only the wife is in Krishna consciousness. Is it the duty of the wife to cook and serve her husband and children non-vegetarian food? No, it is not. So we have our regular, ordinary dharma, but we also have our transcendent dharma. And if we choose, when there's a conflict between the lower dharma and the higher dharma, we choose the lower dharma, then we are in the company of Karna. Karna chose his debt to Duryodhan over surrender to Krishna. And that was a mistake. So generally speaking, our higher dharma and our lower dharma are in harmony. But if they are in conflict, it is our duty to give up the lower dharma for the higher dharma. And when we do that, the world may look at us and say we are fallen. This is the definition of Apichet Sucharachara in the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says that if somebody who's a devotee does something that appears abominable, they're still saintly. And Prabhupada explains there in that purport, he's not talking about a devotee committing murder or something like that. He's talking about that we have two lines of duties. One is material and one is spiritual. And generally these should be in harmony, but sometimes they're in conflict. And when they're in conflict, if we choose the higher dharma, we will be criticized by the people that we are abominable. But still we're considered saintly. Now, of course, in every service there's some kind of fault. Krishna says, just like fire is covered by smoke. So whatever we do in this world has some fault. But you're not going to find any duty in this world that has no fault. If you're going to be a good wife, you're going to be a good husband, you're going to be a good son, a good daughter, whatever. There's always some fault. That's all right. But there has to be a line drawn that you say, I will not go beyond this line. So when it comes to something that is grossly sinful, you know, if your husband wants you to engage you in robbing banks, just because you're the wife, you don't say sorry. You say, I'm sorry. If you want to rob a bank, that's your business. I'm not going to help you rob banks. You say, you know, I'm your wife. I will serve you. I will take care of you. I will feed you. But I'm not going to be complicit in killing the rest of the creatures. If you want to do that, you're going to have to do that without my assistance. If someone has already watched too much of television by the age of 2, what can be done to rectify this mistake? As far as the brain development, unfortunately, nothing. How will the child be able to know whether he has been affected or not? The logical centers of the brain will be less and the visual centers of the brain will be more, and it's permanent, you can't fix it. Sorry. Some things we do, they can't be fixed. But we always have to go on from now and make the best decision from now. And just because something can't be fixed doesn't mean you give up from now and in the future. So start from now and do the right thing. And there will be some suffering for our mistakes, and we have to tolerate that. That's true for all of us with everything. The only way to go back and fix things is to get another birth, and I don't think we want to do that. So don't have the mood, I need to go back and fix everything, have the mood, whatever there is, let me go on from there. Are the rules for parenting the children in Krishna consciousness only a mother's duty? Are the fathers also concerned? Well, I notice we have twice as many ladies as men here. But we do have men here. We did not forbid them to come. I was once in a temple where some sannyasi was giving a class, and he was speaking about parents as if all parents are mothers. And I was actually kind of disturbed. I didn't say anything to him. But I thought, there's fathers too! The research has shown that the role of a father in the life of a child is more important than the role of a mother. That's the research. The research is that children who grow up without a father are at much higher risk for crime, delinquency, you know, poor health problems, a naturally early puberty, all kinds of things, physiologically, not only psychologically, much more so than children who grow up without a mother. So I don't think that the role of the father is a small thing. Now, if we consider how important the role of the mother is, if the role of the father is even more important, then it's certainly a very important role. Now, obviously, if there is no father, for whatever reason, Hare Krishna, what to do? But the role of the father is extremely important. And there's just statistically speaking, in terms of sociological, psychological research, that's the case. I don't think anybody knows exactly why. There's all kinds of research as to why that is the case. I don't know the reason. But as we know, in different species, there's different family arrangements. In some species, there's a group that raises the children, like lions have a pride, right? And the horses have a herd. And in some species, it's mostly females, like elephants, that raise the children. Then we have like the seahorses and the giraffes, where the males take the main responsibility to raise the children. But Krishna has arranged among human society that there's a mother and a father. I know this has become controversial in modern society, but we make no apology for biology. I don't understand why we have to justify biology. This is bewildering to my brain. So biologically, Krishna has arranged that there's a male and a female to produce children. I learned that, I think, when I was like 7 or 8 years old. And there's different psychology. Males and females have different psychologies. Our brains are wired differently. We function differently. We each bring something different to the relationship. We each bring something different to the education of the child. And of course, if only the wife is a devotee and the husband's not a devotee, what can you do? You can't force your husband or your wife at gunpoint to practice Krishna consciousness and to be involved in the Krishna conscious education of the children. But the more that both parents can be involved, the better. That's... Oh, yeah. Is it wrong to take the example of others, friends, peer group, etc., when we're talking to our children, especially to you? Well, depends how you take it. If you're comparing your children to others in a way that, well, he does that, why can't you do that? I don't think that's a very good idea. But examples are very helpful. Prabhupada said example is better than precept. So in general, if you just give an idea, but you don't see that idea put into practice, it's hard to know what to do. If we say, surrender to Krishna, but you don't have any examples of anyone who surrendered to Krishna, then what does that mean? Or if you say, just be humble, but you don't see an example of humility, you don't know what that means. So without specific, concrete examples, it's very hard to teach anything. And if we can use examples of people that our children know and know intimately, as long as it's not a competitive or comparative example. It's not, as long as it's not, well, why can't you be like him? You don't want to get into that. If we're finding some faults in our husbands and we're pointing same to our children, well, that's a little tricky. Now, you know, it is true that when your children get to be teenagers, they're going to see your faults, whether you point them out or not. Yes? Do you all remember getting to 12, 13, 14, and all of a sudden you noticed your parents were not demigods? Remember that? So that will happen to your children also. It may sometimes be necessary if your spouse, whether your husband or your wife, do something that's really wrong, and the children see it's really wrong, and they know it's really wrong, it may not be a good idea to try to pretend it's not wrong. All right? So if your wife is smoking, your husband is drinking, you know, it may be, and the child says, why is mommy smoking? So you don't want to, you want to be careful, but you also want to say, well, you know, she's a good person, but it's something she has a problem with. So you want to deal with it very carefully. All right? Does that make sense? You want to deal with it very carefully. You don't want your children to criticize. Well, Hare Krishna, all of you. You don't want your children to criticize either of their parents. At the same time, if you pretend that there's no problem in a very obvious and gross problem, your children will lose respect for both of you. Okay? If one of the parents has a very obvious problem and a very gross problem, that there's no way that the child is not going to see that problem, pretending it's not there, the child will disrespect both of you. You know, you'll lose their respect. But you've got to deal with it carefully. I know as a mother of grown married children and mother-in-law, So sometimes my grandchildren come to me complaining about their parents. They may complain about my child, or they may complain about my daughter-in-law or son-in-law. This doesn't really happen until they're, again, teenagers. And what I found, I can say, well, you know, okay, your father or your mother, they're not perfect, but they're trying, and they love you, and they're trying to do a good job, and see if you can work with them anyway. And I find that if I take that tact, the teenagers are much more likely to confide in me and to work with me and to try to get along with their parents. And if I just say, what do you mean, you know, how dare you say anything wrong about your parent, they're perfect, then I just shut off my relationship with the child altogether. Okay. No, then I will die. What would be nice would be if I had like a basket. Oh, look at that! Somebody with intelligence. Okay, which would take you a minute to sort it out. So just give him a minute to sort it out.
A lot of teenagers have two words.
I didn't notice that! I couldn't figure out, what are they doing here? This is a seminar on parenting. Do you guys have kids yet? I notice they're all young men. I know a few ladies here. So what are you guys all doing here? This is a parenting seminar. Do you want to come and see how badly your parents are parenting so you can give them a hard time after the seminar? So, and you're all the way over there. I can't even see most of you. So what can I do for you guys? Just kind of wanted to come and check out what we were doing. By the way, we have a really nice, oh, thank you. Always good to have somebody with some brains. So, which I obviously didn't have any at all. So thank you. We're going to be giving, right now we're doing a question and answer about being parents. So if you guys want to listen to this and see how you can do better than your parents did, you can go up and stay. Otherwise, we're going to be giving a seminar tomorrow night starting at 6? 6 Mauritian time? Hopefully it starts before 10. So we're going to be giving a seminar tomorrow night at 6 on the Splendid Instructions to the Mind by Raghunath Das Goswami. So it's going to be a multimedia presentation, and I'm sure you'll find it very interesting. So I invite you to come and check that out. And of course, you're welcome to hang out here. Everyone just wrote down, not everybody, but everybody was invited to write down questions which we're now going through with this clipboard, and we're trying to answer. Woohoo, we've got a clipboard. All right. So now I actually have another hand. Okay, a son of 12 years old feels annoyed when I ask him to do puja or a chant. How unusual. 12-year-olds often feel annoyed when their parents ask them to do anything. But he himself is asked to bring a deity at home. This is really nice. I like this one. If you're willing to identify yourself, you get a sweet for this. But I can see why you might not want to identify yourself. You could go quietly and take a sweet later. This is so funny, isn't it? If I ask my kid to do puja, he's like, get me alone, mother. But then he wants to do puja himself. It sounds like you got a good kid here who wants to do the right thing. Why don't you just leave him alone a little bit? This is just sort of encouraging people with what they spontaneously want to do instead of telling them what to do. Okay. How can we teach children sacrifice? Well, first of all, by doing it yourself and being happy about it. That's a good start. I once visited a family where, you know, the husband comes home from work, and the only thing the wife says is, can you help me with this? Can you help me with that? Why don't you do that? Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Why don't you do that? And she said to her husband, you know, servant isn't part of my job description. So I was sitting there in the living room, very quiet. Of course, somehow it was in the husband's job description to be her servant, but it wasn't in her job description to be his servant, modern family. So the main way we teach our children sacrifice is we live a life of happy sacrifice. And
I just passed it on.
Oh, okay, but then get a chair. No. Get a real chair. No, you're not sitting on that. Get a real chair. Humility is nice, but you know, a real chair. Goodbye, teenagers. Okay. It's like, what were they doing here? I couldn't figure it out. Okay, so to do sacrifice and to be happy at it. Well, to yourself live a life of happy sacrifice. Not sacrifice in the mode of passion where you complain about it and, oh, why am I doing this? Why am I doing that? And engage your children in sacrificing for a higher cause in ways that they will enjoy. It's not so clear to me what it means to engage children in sacrifice. Have them use their time, their energy, their talents, their money, if they have money, to do something for the sake of Lord Chaitanya's mission, to do something for the sake of others. Don't have them spend all their time just playing and studying for themselves and just doing some chores for the family. Have them do something for the greater society and the greater mission. And from as young of an age as you can possibly do it. All right, spare the rod and spoil the child. How far do you agree with this statement? That's from the Bible, it's not from the Vedas. So if you want to be a Christian, go for it. But that's not our philosophy. I think in a general sense, we do have to correct our children. Srila Prabhupada was not in favor of a physical punishment. He wasn't entirely against it, by the way. But he wasn't in favor of it, particularly for teachers. And it certainly shouldn't be something that's used in general. But we do have to correct our children. Even Mother Yasoda had to correct Krishna. It's not that you just let children do whatever they want. If you want to study about how to correct children, there's a lot of good mundane books on the market about how to discipline children and how to correct them. Find a method that works for you. Why are devotees having so much problem imbibing Krishna consciousness in their own children? I find that a very general statement. Devotees, I don't know how many devotees having so much problem. I find this too vague of a statement for me. I see some devotees have a lot of problems and some devotees don't. And the four things that we talked about yesterday, I really find is the key. So they don't have relationships of love and trust. They're exposing their children just to mundane stories. They're not engaging their children in any meaningful service. And they're giving them negative emotional experiences related to Krishna consciousness. So all or some portion of those is probably what's going on. Or maybe they're not even teaching them Krishna consciousness at all. I mean, we do have some devotees that the children are just sort of devotees in a general sense. Is it possible to prosper in Krishna consciousness if we find out, this is a really heavy question, if we find out in reality that the husband or wife is maintaining an illicit relationship? Well, it's very interesting. Our own Krishna consciousness is not dependent on how mistreated or cheated or betrayed we are by others. Our own Krishna consciousness is dependent on how we treat others, not how we are treated by others. We can be Krishna conscious no matter how poorly others treat us. We are not dependent on other people treating us nicely. in order to always be Krishna conscious. Now, if we are not treating others nicely, it will be very difficult to be Krishna conscious. If I'm not kind to others, if I'm not loyal to others, if I'm not responsible, if I don't behave properly, being Krishna conscious is possible but difficult. Krishna consciousness is not dependent on mundane dharma. But if I'm not behaving properly in this world, the laws of mundane dharma are also Krishna's. Such, Dharmam tu saksha bhagavat pranitam. Even the ordinary laws of dharma come from Krishna. So if we are engaging in illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, or gambling, our ability to focus our mind on Krishna will be compromised. But if someone else is hurting me, my ability to focus on Krishna consciousness is not compromised. So we can be Krishna conscious in any situation. That depends on how much we want to love and serve Krishna. If we were dependent on having a perfect material situation in order to be Krishna conscious, then we're out of luck, because there is no perfect material situation. Now, whether a person should stay in the relationship, what they should do to heal the relationship when there's something illicit going on, is beyond the scope of something I can talk about. That's really an individual thing. People have to work that out with their spouse and with proper counseling. Now, some people may be able, I know of many cases where the problem was able to be solved and the relationship healed and people were able to go on, and I know of many cases where it wasn't. So that depends on the individuals involved and what they're willing to do. But my Krishna consciousness is not dependent on how anyone treats me, whether or not people betray me, whether people, it just isn't. If somebody is mistreating me, they're going to suffer in their Krishna consciousness, but my Krishna consciousness doesn't have to suffer. My Krishna consciousness is only dependent on my desire to be Krishna conscious. When Hiranyakashipu was abusing Prahlad, Prahlad's Krishna consciousness didn't suffer, Hiranyakashipu's Krishna consciousness suffered. When to speak of the children's welfare in Krishna consciousness. Again, that's something that you really need to work out individually with a counselor. And this is such an individual situation. So if the situation can be worked out, then the children will see that even very difficult situations, even very painful situations, can be worked out and worked through, and we can go on. If it can't be worked out, then they see that even if you have to dissolve the relationship, you can still go on. So there's ways in which the children can benefit. You know, difficult situations are not necessarily harmful. Difficult situations, the harm or the benefit depends on how we respond to them, not the situations in and of themselves. Two people can live through the same difficulty, and one becomes traumatized and one becomes stronger. So it's not the situation, it's how we respond to them. And if, you know, if it's our spouse who's done something wrong, I think it's up to them. If it's ourself as the spouse who was cheated upon, to help our children to respond to the situation in a way that will make them stronger. And one of the main ways we become stronger in those situations is to remember that the only person we can trust is... That's it. My dear friends, everybody else will betray us to some extent. And we will betray everyone else to some extent. None of us can say, I have perfectly fulfilled all the desires of the other people in my life. Can anyone say that? We've all disappointed other people in our life. Have we perfectly kept all of our promises and all of our assurances to anybody? No. Who can say that? I've disappointed people. People have disappointed me. And the main takeaway we get when somebody does a big betrayal of trust, like having an affair in the world, is to remember that I cannot really depend on another jiva for my happiness. I'm really not. Whether the marriage can be restored, whether the marriage can't be restored, the point is that our only real friend is Krishna. That's it. And thinking that other people are going to be my shelter, or that I'm going to be shelter for another person, thinking I'm going to be happy by having a marriage, or I'm going to be happy by dissolving a marriage, it's just not real. It's not real. I'm going to be happy by falling in love with Krishna. That's all. And if our children can get that out of a difficult situation, without blaming or criticizing the other person. Everybody has weaknesses. Don't we all have weaknesses? And we can say, well, that person's weakness is so much worse than my weakness. I don't know. I think that's risky. We might say, on a practical level, that person's weakness is such that I'm not going to live with them. But to say that that person is so much more sinful and fallen than I am is a very risky position to take. Better to teach our children that people have weaknesses, people make mistakes, sometimes they make very serious mistakes, sometimes they make a serious mistake that has a lifetime consequence. But we may have to keep some distance from people sometimes in our life or change our relationship with people, but we should always be compassionate. Always remember that there but for the grace of God go I. That if I behave properly, it's only because I'm protected by the Lord. Yes? Yes? Can any of us say, I'm absolutely free of any possibility of being tempted by the material energy to do something foolish? Right? Prabhupada said that we should always be very afraid of Maya. And one way to fall victim to Maya is to be very critical of someone else who's fallen victim to Maya. We take the moral high ground and say, well, I'm not like that person. Then Krishna may show us that our moral high ground was only due to his protection. So, then we should be very careful. Now, what did Jesus say? Hate the sin and not the sin. So we can say that's wrong, it's bad, but still have compassion for the person. How can a child be happy when his parents are quarreling? Well, it depends. Do they quarrel and then settle it? Or do they just quarrel and quarrel and quarrel and quarrel and quarrel and quarrel and quarrel? If they quarrel and settle it, then the child gets an example of how to deal with quarrels. And guess what? When they grow up, they're going to quarrel with their spouse sometimes. I've only met a couple of couples who said they never fought in their whole marriage. I only know of two couples who told me they never. One of them said, well, we fought a lot with our children, but not with each other. So generally, between husband and wife, there'll be some quarrel. Even between Shiva and Sati, there is a quarrel. Even Radharani gets angry at Krishna. Krishna doesn't seem to get angry at Radharani, but Radharani gets angry at Krishna. We have to expect in this world there's going to be quarrels. If the parents settle the quarrels, then they're showing an example for the children as to how to settle quarrels. If they never settle their quarrels, and every time they look at each other and talk to each other, they are quarreling, then I suggest that such a couple get some kind of help, just for their own peace and happiness. Or if they are separated, well, again, it depends. Why are they separated and so forth? Separation is necessary if there's criminal activity going on. Separated just because you can't get along with somebody? See if you can get some counseling and learn how to get along with them. Separation for criminal activities is important. If one of the spouses is a child molester, some situations separation is necessary, and what can you do? Go on and do the best that you can. Take that, but that's the child's destiny to be in that kind of a situation. If things are so straightforward, then why is it so difficult to live a conscious life? I don't know. I've been trying to figure that out for a long time. This person should get a sweet. If you're willing to identify, who asked this question? Is this person willing to identify themselves? Nope, you can go privately and get a sweet later. Prabhupada said that Krishna consciousness is easy, but our purpose is not strong. This is the big mystery. Why is it so hard to do something so simple? Just think about Krishna, and he's so attractive. But we struggle so much, isn't it? Just to think about Krishna even when we're chanting our japa. Actually, the main reason it's difficult is we're covered by the modes of material nature, but that doesn't really explain it. Then you say, why are we covered by the modes of material nature? Well, because we want to do sinful things. And in order to do sinful things, I have to be covered by the modes of material nature. If I wasn't covered by the modes of material nature, I wouldn't be able to do sinful things, because I would see them for what they are, and so I wouldn't do them. Do you understand? How many people could eat meat if they understood what they were doing? Very few. So if you want to eat meat, you have to be covered by the mode of ignorance. So you don't understand what you're doing. But when you're covered by the mode of ignorance, Krishna consciousness is very difficult. So I want to enjoy the world in a certain way. To do that, I get covered by the modes, and I'm covered by the modes. Krishna consciousness is very difficult. Happily, if I think about Krishna, that changes my desires. By changing my desires, the modes recede, and then it's easier to think of Krishna. Woo-hoo! The more you think of Krishna, the easier it is to think of Krishna. Don't wait for it to become easy. And say, well, I'm not going to think about Krishna until it becomes easy for me to think about Krishna. Start thinking about Krishna. That will make it easy to think about Krishna, because it will change your desires. All right. How can we distinguish whether one's way of behavior is his nature or bad habits? Nature is the kind of person that you are. Are you energized by people? Are you energized by tasks? Are you more quiet? Are you more talkative? Are you more risk-taking? Are you more cautious? Do you see the big picture? Do you see the details? That's nature. Are you expert in math? Are you expert in art? Are you expert in music? That's nature. Bad habits are you're mean to somebody, you're dirty, you sleep too much. That has nothing to do with nature. Being mean to other people is not your nature. It's not that someone has a nature of being mean to people. That just means you have motive ignorance. You can think of nature as, you know, you have different vehicles. So you have a skateboard, you have a bicycle, you have a motorcycle, you have a car, you have a boat. They have different ways of movement. And none of them are good or bad. They're just different. They have different ways of movement. Now, if you're accustomed to riding your skateboard too fast in the middle of the road, that's a bad habit. But that has nothing to do with the nature of the skateboard. Okay? The skateboard doesn't have a nature to go fast in the middle of the road. The skateboard is neutral. But you travel differently on a skateboard than you do on a boat. Can you understand a little bit of this difference? So we have to figure out, do I have a boat, do I have a plane, do I have a skateboard, do I have a bicycle? What kind of psychological, physiological nature do I have? Bad habits are doing things in the mode of ignorance or the mode of passion that are harmful to me. That may be a misuse of my nature, or it may just be, you know, just a bad habit that has nothing to do with my nature. Does that make sense? If you sleep late, it's nothing to do with what kind of nature you have. There's no connection between what kind of nature you have and sleeping too much. There's not a sleeping nature. That's not one of the natures. It's not a personality trait. Sleep trait. So assuming you don't have some kind of physiological problem, sleeping too much is a bad habit. Okay? yelling at everybody all the time for no reason is a bad habit. But that's not a nature. There's no yelling nature. It's not one of the personality traits. The yelling trait. Okay. In Mauritius, we do not have enough facilities like an eco-village, ISKCON school, Gurukul, and all. So are our children penalized compared to children like in England, Australia, etc.? Yeah, actually. Whoever wrote this, you've already been in my seminars long enough to know that I'm bluntly honest and that I'm not diplomatic. So yeah, it's a fact. If you had a nice school for your children, it would be much better. If you know, the more you're engaged, the more you have facility in your community, the more facility for your children and for you, of course. Yes. Does that mean you can't be Krishna conscious in your situation? No, you can become Krishna conscious in any situation. Should you have your own school? Yes. Should you have more examples of Krishna conscious living? Yeah. I think you're doing pretty well, though. I'm pretty impressed altogether with the community here. Yeah, I think overall, I visit communities all over the world. I'd say you're way up there with your community, with your relationships, with the facility that you have, with the atmosphere in the community. I'd say you're doing very well. Could you do better? Of course. If you did better, would it be better for your children? Yes. Are some communities better than yours? Uh-huh. Most are worse. So you can pat yourself on the head for that. Okay. Is it wrong? Oh, we already saw this. That must have flown away in the breeze. You got seen again. Okay. To what extent is it all right to correct another person's child? Ooh. Most parents really don't like. You can correct another person's child if it's a life or death emergency. Like the kid is running into the street and there's no other parent around. And even if people get mad at you later, it's too bad. Okay? If it's a life or death emergency, you can do anything, and if people give you a hard time later, tolerate it. You can correct another person's child. Other than that, only if the parents give you permission to do so, or you are in the position of that child's teacher. And it doesn't matter how bad of parents you think the other parents are. Unless you want to adopt that child. Krishna gave that child to the other family, not to you. How to manage it when we have small kids' family service so that our sadhana does not suffer too much, so it can suffer a little bit, huh? We have a seminar on this that you can check out online, Material Spiritual Balance, and I would refer you to that. It's on ISKCON Desire Tree. I'm not sure if we have it on video. It may just be on audio. I'm not sure if there's a video. But balancing material spiritual life, material spiritual balance, and we talk about this at some length. I think we also talked about this in the Sadhana for Parenting seminar that we did today. And how to have a life in harmony. And I really hate to say this, but we have to decide what we prioritize. And I'm just going to make this point again. We're not going to get everything done in life. It's not going to happen. Put the important things first. Like Stephen Covey says, the main thing is to make the main thing the main thing. And please put Krishna first. Please, put Krishna first. It doesn't mean you neglect your family while you spend, 7 hours a day in your sadhana. It's not what it means. It's part of our service to Krishna to take care of our family. It's part of our service to Krishna to take care of our occupation. God, put Krishna first. Is it possible to live consciously without being Krishna conscious? That's a very interesting question. Up to a point, there's degrees of consciousness. The mode of passion is a higher consciousness than the mode of ignorance. The mode of goodness is a higher consciousness than the mode of passion. The Brahman consciousness is higher than the mode of goodness. Paramatma consciousness is higher than Brahman consciousness. Narayana consciousness is higher than Paramatma. And Krishna in Dwarka is higher, and Krishna in Vrindavan is a higher state of consciousness. So, of course, every living entity is conscious. But we're talking about degrees of consciousness. So, can you be in the mode of goodness without being Krishna conscious? Oh, yes, of course. Even demons can be in the mode of goodness. Even demons can be in Brahman consciousness, right? So, you can be an atheist in the mode of goodness. So you don't have to be a theist to be in the mode of goodness. And in the mode of goodness, there are Buddhists in the mode of goodness. You don't believe in the self, you don't believe in God. And they are very conscious. But relative, it depends on, you know, it's relative. Ultimate consciousness is consciousness of the ultimate truth, which is Krishna. That was a good question, too. Are you willing to identify yourself and get asleep? If not, then you can go and later just pick this one. For a girl at around what age should we start teaching her philosophy of chastity so that she can understand it well and not confuse or think that we are fanatics? Well, I would say from the beginning, why don't, you know, set an example. And from the beginning of life, there should be stories. You know, you should train the children in stories of properly behaved men and women. If they're hearing the stories of the Ramayana and the Mahabharata and the Bhagavatam and the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and don't expose them to stories of improperly behaved persons. And that this starts very young. I mean, we're talking about, you know, 1 year old, 2 years old. What stories? If you're going to expose them to stories of unchaste and promiscuous women at a young age and then think that once they hit puberty they will train them in chastity, well, good luck with that. You know, I think it really is what stories and what examples are you training them. As far as being fanatic, I think that this has to do with our systems in ISKCON for helping people get married. So if we have proper systems for helping our young people find a spouse, and we introduce those systems to our children at a fairly young age, like as soon as they hit puberty, if we say to them, you know, you're going to be interested in the opposite sex, that's normal, it just means you're healthy. The only people who aren't are, you know, people who are ill or liberated. It's a normal, healthy thing. And we will help you find a suitable person. And then have systems in place where you do that, have proper matchmaking systems. And if you do that, then it's not going to be that difficult. And if you don't do that, it's going to be very difficult. You know, if you don't have a system for feeding people, and you tell them they can't bring their own food, it's not going to work. If you tell people you can't bring your own food, but we're not going to feed you. So if we say to our teenagers and young adults, we're not going to help you find a spouse, but don't advertise yourself, it's not going to work. So, boys and girls advertise themselves differently because they have different attractive features. Boys will advertise themselves by their strength and their intelligence and their status and so forth, and girls will advertise themselves by their physical attractiveness. If you don't want the girls to do that, if you don't want them to advertise themselves, then help them to find somebody suitable without having to advertise themselves. It's not reasonable to say to a young woman, I'm not going to help you find somebody, but don't advertise yourself. It's not fair. Then you're just telling them you have to fast. That's not a fair or reasonable thing to do. All right. Why children are always attracted to media, they have a higher taste than chanting or engaging in Krishna conscious activities. Well, they don't have a higher taste. You can't say, why are they doing a lower taste if they have a higher taste? Of course. it's degrees. A person may like Krishna consciousness, but still have some attraction. It's not an on and off switch, as I think we've all discovered in our own lives, yes? There's certain things we're very attracted to spiritually, and certain things that we may still be attracted to materially, yes? Is that true for everybody? So that's true for our children also. There are certain things in Krishna consciousness we may find very easy and very attractive, and there's no struggle. I'll ask all of you. Are there certain things in Krishna consciousness you find very, very easy to do? Who has some in Krishna consciousness they find very easy to do? Nobody? Nothing? Vegetarianism? Who? Do you all struggle with being a vegetarian? Who has things in Krishna consciousness you find very easy to do? Nothing? Is there one thing in Krishna consciousness you find easy to do? Who has at least one thing?
Eating prasadam.
Eating prasadam. Right. God, some of you, it's like, my God, the whole thing's a struggle. All right, who of you have at least one thing in Krishna consciousness? You do it, but it's a little bit of a struggle. At least one thing that you do it, but it's a little bit of a struggle. Some of you, everything's easy. Okay. And who has something that's a big struggle? You still haven't figured out how to do it. All right, well, guess what? That's the same for everybody. Unless you're completely 100% pure. Certain things are really, really, really easy. You don't have to think about it. It's no struggle at all. You just do it. You're not even aware that you're doing it. It's so easy. Some things, you do them, but you have to make an effort. And some things, no matter how much you've made an effort, still haven't figured out how to do them. Right? Yes? Yes? Yes, 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 yes. We're tired. It's the end of the day. We've had two long days of seminars. So it's going to be the same for our children. And media is very attractive. It's designed to be attractive. So you watch it and buy the products. It's very attractive. It's not surprising that somebody's attracted to it. So what we want to do for ourselves and for our children is focus on the areas where we have a taste and grow them. Don't so much focus on the negative. Focus on the areas where we have a taste and grow it, and eventually the negatives will take care of themselves. The only time we want to focus on the negatives at all is when we're dealing with Vaishnava Pura. That you really want to take, because that just kills everything. It just destroys the whole thing. Other things focus on, we put the main focus, 90% of focus on the positive. Same question. Why teenagers, despite having a good spiritual training, are still attracted to material activities like fashion, celebrities, and non-devotional songs? Basically the same question. They're attractive. Yes? Are they attractive? Are they? Of course. And the main thing you say is, hey, if you think this is attractive, Krishna is more attractive. Try to get the child involved, the teenager involved, in some meaningful service and positive emotional experiences. Instead of just restrict, restrict, restrict. There can be some restriction, but mostly go for the positive emotional experiences, the meaningful service, the stories about Krishna, and love and trust relationships. And that will help a person to become detached from the other things. The other things, they're attractive. They're not really attractive, of course. If you see what they really are, they're disgusting. But there's a glitter about them, isn't it? Not so surprising. Sons and disciples are to be chastised. Please elaborate. Yes, you don't just want to say to your children, oh, whatever you want to do, that's okay. You gotta correct them. Correct them within a love and trust relationship and appropriately. But of course, that's your duty to correct your children. Of course it is. Of course it is. You have to do that. It's your duty. If you don't know how to do that, there's so many books out there. I'm not going to get into that. I don't have time. And there's so many good books and courses on how to correct and discipline children without damaging the relationship and effectively. Keeping pets for Krishna conscious children like birds and fish. How far we are allowed, age 3.5. In a natural society, there's animals that are part of the society. Right? In natural society, people have cows. That Krishna had cows, goats, and buffaloes. I don't know if you can do that here. Right? And people kept cats and dogs for the mice and the rats. You want to be careful about bringing animals into your home. And you also want to be careful about children developing a stronger attachment to the animal than to the deity. So I used to write an educational column for Back to Godhead magazine. I wrote one article about not being too attached to your children. I got no negative feedback for that article. Then I wrote an article about children and pets. We got the most negative letters at Back to Godhead that we ever got for any article ever. Somehow nobody minded that I said don't be attached to your children, but when I said don't be attached to animals, people just went completely ballistic. And I reread that article 100 times, and I'm like, what did I say that sparked this? So you can go on the Back to Godhead website on Krishna.com and you can read my article about children and pets, and then you can write me a very nasty, heavy letter about it and join the crowd. We have examples in the Shastra of animals that got liberated because of the devotees, like Shivananda Sen's dog. And then we have examples of Bharat Maharaj, who fell from his bhakti because of being attached to a deer. So the main question is, can you elevate the animal or are you going to become degraded? I mean, I know in our own family, we had a number of very, in my own devotee family, not my non-devotee birth family, but in my own family in Krishna consciousness, we had a number of very unusual pets. So I don't know if you all know what an opossum is. They don't have any in this country. But in America, the opossum is the only native marsupial. You all know what a marsupial is? One that have the babies in the pouch. So the only North American marsupial is an opossum. And one mother opossum was at our temple. They have about 12 babies at a time. And once the babies climb out of the pouch, they hang on to the mother. And one of them fell off. And the mother just never came back. And the baby was just crying at the temple. And so the Gurukul, we were running a Gurukul, and the Gurukul children came to me and said, please, can we take care of this baby opossum? So we did. We raised this baby opossum until it was big. It was a wild animal. So even though we took care of it, it was never grateful. We called it Jetta because it was really stupid, like a stone. This creature was very low grade consciousness. As soon as it grew up, it became nasty. It had no gratitude that we raised it. When it grew up, we put it out in the forest. But so the children took care of this opossum. That was one of our pets. We kept it outside. Very unusual creature. It would use its water bowl as a toilet. It was really stupid. But we had that as a pet. And then we had a garden, and we had slugs in the garden. Do you know what a slug is? A slug is like a snail without a shell. And they just destroy the gardens. I notice here you have very big snails, like humongous snails. So we had these huge slugs. This was in Detroit. We were right by the river. And they would just destroy the garden. So we were trying to figure out what to do. And in doing some research, we found out that ducks eat slugs. So we bought some ducks. And they ate the slugs. It was, and so the ducks were our pets. They lived outside, of course. It was really interesting because the children and I took care of the ducks, but somehow they really liked my husband, although he didn't do anything for them. It was so completely unfair, you know. We fed them and we petted them and played with them, and my husband did nothing, and they loved him. They, as soon as his vehicle would come back from work, when it was at the other end of the street, they'd hear his vehicle and they would get so excited. He never fed them. I could never figure it out. And they'd go, and they would come to the door and they would greet him. They were much better than me, you know. Seriously, I mean, I didn't go, oh, you're home! Sue swallowed your tongue, but the ducks did. Yeah, you and he always said, I feel so loved when I come home with these ducks. We had a very small garden though, so eventually they ate all of the slugs. And then they were very clumsy creatures. And while they were looking for more slugs, they would step on the plants. They wouldn't eat the plants, but they would step on them. So we eventually gave them away to a teaching farm where they weren't going to be killed. So those were our two examples of our household pets that I had. Both very, one a mercy case and one utilitarian. Oh, we also had, this is much later. This is when my children were grown up. We had some lady drive up to our school and drop off a mother dog and I think four puppies. And just dump them in our school and drive away. Now, our school was in a wooded area, and I would have been totally happy to let the dogs just simply run away into the forest. But two of the students, two little girls, they went and grabbed the dogs. It's like, oh no. And once they grabbed the dogs, they took it to the school building. It was our family that lived in the school building, not these girls. They didn't take the dogs home. They took them into our... Oh my God. So all of a sudden, we had these like five or six dogs that we were taking care of. Hare Krishna. And then finally, I just said, we're giving the dogs away. So my son and I took the dogs to the local town, and we just put up a sign, somebody abandoned these dogs at our school, please take them, people adopted them. What to do if the child says he is tired and doesn't want to chant after school hours? Well, maybe the child is tired after school hours. Maybe you should chant it another time. So, you don't have to assume that if the child says they're tired, it just means that they're a demon. Maybe they're just tired. You can just say, when is the time we can chant that you're not tired? Okay. Watching Krishna cartoons can have a negative impact on children as regards to fighting with demons or violence in other storytelling. This question comes up a lot. I hear this question all over the world. So, violence in children's stories has been there from the beginning of time. If you look at the old fairy tales, right? If you look at all the old fairy tales and the stories that were told to children, you will find that there's violence. Now, that violence, of course, was very different than a lot of the violence you see on TV or video games or things like that. But there definitely was violence. I remember the story of Hansel and Gretel and the wolf, the witch wants to put them in the oven and so many things, right? Yes? There's definitely violence. So my understanding is that traditionally children were told stories to prepare them metaphorically for dealing with the adult world and to try to give children stories that are sanitized is probably not good for them. At the same time, Prabhupada was objecting to television for adults because of all the violence. You know, there's studies that if you ask even very educated people, you know, how much crime is there, if they watch a lot of television, they'll answer according to television instead of life. And when I read that, I realized I have never in my actual life seen one person shoot another person. I've never seen such a thing. But I feel like I have. I feel like I've seen a person shoot another person because I saw it on TV and movies. I've never actually seen it. So violence on TV and movies distorts our view of the world. So it's not a good idea for anyone. Now, of course, Krishna's violence is actually very reassuring to children. There may be monsters, there may be terrible things, but Krishna will come and save you. This is a scary world, folks. This is a very scary world. One of my former students, her teenage son was just diagnosed with a brain tumor. And she was talking to me last night, and she was saying, you know, how can this happen? And I said, well, you know, you are looking at a possibility that your son may die, or may be permanently handicapped. I said, but actually that's a possibility for all of us all the time. It's possible at every minute of every day for any of us to die or to become permanently handicapped. Isn't that correct? But we're not generally aware of it. I said, this situation is put in front of your face. You all familiar with the story of the sword of Damocles?
Yeah.
You don't know that story? So there was this king, and his friend said to him, you're enjoying as the king. I wish I could be the king. He said, okay, for one day you can be the king. So the friend got to sit at the table with the feast and the dancing girls and the praises. And at one point, the friend looks up and he sees there's a sword hanging from the ceiling by a string. And he says, what's this? And Damocles says, oh, that comes with the kingdom. So, you know, we all have this sword of Damocles over our head at all the times. Just a question of whether we're aware of it or not. All right. How to raise our children in Krishna consciousness if only one of the parents are practicing those four things that we talked about. No matter how difficult the situation is, if you can do it, even one of them. Okay, I don't know if we're going to get to all this. Because I'm getting tired and hungry now. All right. I am practicing Krishna consciousness, but my family are not devotees. They do not want to become devotees. They just want to continue to pray to the demigods. It's interesting in each country, the different things. In China, people would tell me, my families just want to do worship of the ancestors. I have a son of 12 years old, and he does not want to become a devotee. He does not chant any mantra japa. He does not attend Mangalarti. He does not attend a Muslim program, a festival. He wakes up late. As a mother, I have tried to make him a devotee, but my Shiksha Guru is telling me to start a Gurukul. I have myself failed to make my son become a devotee, and I am trying to do the service for other children. Is doing that okay? Yes. It is. Okay. Habits are hard to break. I noticed this. How can a parent proceed to help a child or children break up bad habits given by the parents themselves? Woohoo! If you're willing to identify yourself, you get a sweet for this one. Anybody willing, are you willing to identify yourself? There you go. Give her a sweet. How do I get my children to give up bad habits that I've trained them in? Why don't we work on that together, maybe? Okay? If it's a bad habit that I've given my children, why don't I work on that together? If you want to know how to break bad habits, sorry to do this, that's another seminar. And I have it online. You're welcome to listen to it online. 8 ways to change bad behaviors. Maybe next time I come to Mauritius, we'll teach that one. If you would like a copy of the book I base it on, just let me know and I can give you a copy. But 8 Ways to Change Bad Behaviors, it is seminars online, and my handout for that seminar is on my website. It's on my website. There's a section that says about seminars. There's seminar descriptions, and there's also seminar handouts, and you can find the chart for that. So you can listen to the seminar on ISKCON Desire Tree, and you can download the handout. You understand what I'm saying? Like I'm giving you handouts here? So you can do that. But if you've given the kid the bad habit, be humble. And work on it with your kid. Great question. How should a parent react if a teenage child tells him openly he's interested in trying some drugs such as marijuana? say, yeah, you know, everyone is looking for samadhi. That's just trying for cheap, easy samadhi. The problem with cheap, easy samadhi is it's not cheap. Looks cheap. All I have to do is smoke this drug, eat this drug, and I'll get into samadhi. Very cheap. Not cheap. You have to pay for it. You have to pay for it heavy, and you have to pay for it long. And this looks like it's easy. I don't have to work hard for it. This material world is designed to favor sacrifice. If we try to get something without sacrifice, we pay for it later. Basically, trying to get samadhi by taking a drug is trying to steal samadhi. And you have to pay for it later. So just like if you want to buy something, right? You go to the shop, you pay your 500 rupees, you buy something. But if you steal that same thing, you have to pay much more than 500 rupees. Much, much more. You get caught by the police, you have to spend hours filling out forms at the police station, you may have to spend the night in jail, you have to go to court, you may have to pay the fine. Altogether, so much more. If we try to steal things, the price is much higher than if we pay for them. I would say to my kid, you want samadhi? Earn it. Don't try to steal it through some drug. Wanting samadhi is good. We're all destined, we're all designed to be in samadhi. Earn it. Do the sacrifice. Pay for it. Much cheaper. Much cheaper. Wanting samadhi is a good thing. Trying to get it through chemicals, the price you'll pay will be very high. Talking about chanting Panchatattva mantra. There's one purport where Prabhupada says we should chant the Panchatattva mantra before the Hare Krishna mantra. That's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. But Srila Prabhupada, as I said then, never instructed that with japa, never did that with japa. So that's clearly referring to Hare Krishna. Please explain about how to finger the beads. I already explained it. So I'm not really sure why I need to explain it. Alright. This person wrote 4 questions on 1 paper. What will happen if Krishna Consciousness Society opts for banning the use of TV in mobiles? Yeah, good luck with that. How is the Krishna Conscious Society going to ban TV in mobiles? It's not going to happen. This is the 2 biggest hindrances in our society. I respectfully disagree. I think the biggest hindrances in our society are false ego and Vaishnava Bharat. Sorry, I don't think TV and mobiles are the biggest hindrances to Krishna consciousness. You can have Krishna conscious TV, you can use your mobile to call devotees. I don't think that's the problem. The problem is Vaishnava Bharat and a big fat false ego. I am always right, I am wonderful. And Mauritius people enjoy too much opulences. Really? Cut down those coconut trees, folks. I don't know. Too much coconut water here. Start drinking 7-Up instead. You can always move to Alaska or something, I suppose. This is the main drawback for progressing in bhakti. The main drawback for progressing in bhakti is our false ego. I am wonderful, I am great, I am better than you. I am better than all of you, all the time, in everything. I am never wrong. I am a wonderful devotee. You are not. That's the problem with progressing in Krishna consciousness. Everything else stems from that. No, I don't agree you have too many opulences here. Your opulences here are mostly natural opulences. That's good. If the whole world were Krishna conscious, we would all be like Mauritius, except we wouldn't just grow sugar cane.
Only sugar.
Only sugar. We would grow sugar cane, but not only sugar. When the whole world was Krishna conscious, the whole world was tropical. You have even more opulences than Mauritius, not less. Do you think if the whole world is Krishna conscious, we'd all be in poverty and devastation? Why do you want to worship a god like that? If the whole world was Krishna conscious, we'd all be poor and deprived, and nobody would have any opulences. Why do you want to surrender to a god like that? If the whole world was Krishna conscious, then all the fruit trees would produce fruit without cultivation. The fields would produce grains without cultivation. The cows would give milk automatically. The milk would be overflowing in the fields. We wouldn't have to do agriculture. That's Satyayuga. Satyayuga, nobody has to work. Everything's just provided. The jewels just come out of the earth. The gold just comes out of the earth. You're fully Krishna conscious, you're in the spiritual world. And you just say, I'd like some roses. There they are. Unlimited opulences. The more Krishna conscious we are, the more we have unlimited opulences. Opulences are not the problem. The problem is our false ego. They're very happy you're in a country full of natural opulences. So it's a wonderful, wonderful opportunity. If you don't like it, then you can have next birth, you know, in Siberia or something. If that's really bothering you. Okay. Do other religions like Christianity, Buddhist, and Islamic culture teach the three modes of nature? Buddhism does, because Buddhism comes from the Vedas. Christianity and Islam do not. So the Abrahamic religions have very little understanding of the material nature. They have very little understanding of anything, frankly. How to defeat our ego? Cultivate your real ego. Cultivate your real ego. Jivarashtra Paya Krishna Chidasa. Always rejoice in being a servant. When someone corrects you, when your plans fail, when you're not able to control the material energy, celebrate that your false ego has been defeated. When we go to lectures, the children sometimes find it boring because they do not understand. No, they find it boring if it's boring. You guys ever going to invite me back to your country? You've got to train the speakers to give interesting lectures. I'm sorry, you cannot take children to a boring lecture and encourage them to find it not boring. You have this wonderful devotee who teaches people how to cook. We also need to teach people how to preach. If the lectures are really boring and you can't teach the teachers how to teach, then have separate classes for the children. But don't force your children to go to boring lectures, otherwise you're going to have that problem with negative emotional experiences. You must sit in this boring lecture. My family, my two sons, age 18 and 20, respectively. Since childhood, they have had bad association. In parallel, I have done many efforts to make them Krishna conscious. They do go to satsang, iprasadam, but they have never had an inclination towards Krishna consciousness. They still prefer the bad association. What could be the solution? Well, at 18 or 20, they're not your children anymore, in a sense. They're other adults. And at that point, you just have to treat them as you would treat any other adult. And just try to be their friend. And just try to show them how happy you are in Krishna consciousness. That's really all you can do for someone who's 18, 20 years old. You have a chance to mold your children until they're 16. That's it. After they're 16, you cannot mold them anymore, except by their willing cooperation. What it is be their friend. Show them that you're a happy, peaceful, and balanced person by your Krishna consciousness, so that maybe one day they'll say, hey, how can I be like you? How can we develop an appreciation for other teachings and religions? This is really way off of the child philosophy. Okay, how can we teach that to the children? What I did in the Gurukul is I had some books from other religions, and I tried to present to the children the good in other religions. the areas of other religions where they agree with Krishna consciousness. There's a lot of good in other religions. I mean, most of the world's religions teach very similar moral and ethical principles. So I think that can be presented to the children from a young age. How can we help those devotees or children who have been dependent on a certain leader but now being disturbed by his or her behavior towards them? This is a really deep topic, and I don't have time to go into it in depth. But we have to work just to please Krishna and not to please jivas separate from Krishna. That's the essential answer. We have to work just to please Krishna. If we're working to please another jiva separate from Krishna, then when that jiva disappoints us, it will upset our faith in Krishna. I wish I had the time to go into it. That's a, you know, 2-hour class. And most of us run into this at some point, yes? That we get disappointed by the behavior of a leader, and many people give up Krishna consciousness because of that reason. And we really have to separate what is Krishna consciousness and what is the behavior of individuals in the Krishna consciousness movement. Being a practicing devotee, how can I show my appreciation and gratitude to my parents or relatives who are not devotees? Well, appreciate whatever nice things that they have done for you. Everybody has something that can be appreciated. Express your gratitude for that. Okay, and this is it, folks. That's it. If a child is doing well in a certain field of sport, is it good to encourage him to reach a national level or to go very extreme? Well, there was a Peter Burwash, who was a tennis champion. And when he came to Prabhupada, Prabhupada said, play tennis for Krishna. So, if your child has abilities in a sport and that can become their career, but you want to encourage that like you would encourage any career, they have to have a balanced life. If it's just a sport and it's not going to be a career, then keep it in that realm. Don't let it take over your kid's life. If it's about exercise and it's about enthusiasm for the sport, keep it in its place alongside everything else. But if that's really where your child wants to focus, if they're going to focus on being a scientist or they're going to focus on whatever they want, have them connect that to Krishna. But make sure that all the areas of their life are balanced. Mauritius is the best country to do bhakti. Do you agree? Oh my God, Krishna Chaitanya. This is the last question I've answered. Even more than India was their success. Sure, okay, sure. Go for it. I think America's the best country to do bhakti. What's your problem? The best place to do bhakti is called Goloka Vrindavan. Whatever situation you're in, take the best from that and use it in Krishna service. There's always going to be downsides and upsides to every situation. Focus on what facility that you have. But I do think that this country offers a very nice opportunity to be Krishna conscious. Yes, I think it does. Are there some things about it that don't? Yes. But overall, I think it's a very good opportunity to be Krishna conscious. First of all, it's a predominantly Hindu country. That's a big thing in your favor. You have national holidays for Hindu holidays. Wow. Wow. You have people in general that are going to respect that Krishna consciousness is part of their culture. Wow. Those are big things. And the Hinduism here isn't a little strange like Bali. You've been to Bali, the Hinduism there is a little funny. So you're pretty close to the tradition. Also, I don't know how you're going to take this. I don't think you have much caste consciousness here, do you? You do. But not so much. I don't think you have so much caste conscious. Do you? Because the original Indians who came here were more homogeneous, wasn't it? So you don't have so much.
We are Brahmanas.
Right? You don't have that so much here. And I see there's not so much racism here, right? Correct? Huh?
Not that skin kiss.
But not so much. Like in Trinidad, which is half Indian, half black, there's a lot of racism. The Indians really like, we are better than the blacks. And the blacks are, we are better than the Indians. So you don't seem to have that here. And then you have a climate where you can grow things all year round. Wow. And you can grow mangoes and papayas and sugarcane. So many wonderful things. Yes. So you have so much nice facility. Didn't Prabhupada say this could be the first Krishna conscious country?
Yes.
So do it. Right? Why not?
That's why you're here.
That's why I'm here. I'm here to help you. But anyway, every place has its opulences. Every place has its opulences, and every place has its struggles. So thank you very much for your kind attention over 2 days, so many hours. And as I said again yesterday, anything good you've gotten from me comes from Srila Prabhupada. Anything bad for me, I take full credit. So I hope that you can pick up something valuable that you can apply in your life. And if I said anything that was wrong or disturbing, please forgive me and excuse me. Thank you for your wonderful, wonderful hospitality. I'm just so impressed by your hospitality. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.